on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Rich and Poor provides universal inclusive beauty products that solve your skin problems with just one use, and proudly sponsors the new Owl Hour business show, hosted by Sophie Newbold on Phoenix FM.
Hello and welcome to the Owl Hour. My name is Sophie Newbold, and on Phoenix FM, this is a business radio show where I will be talking to various business owners about their journeys, and we'll ask them what problem have they been setting out to solve in order to make money, have a living, and also what their sort of story of success and challenges have been in doing so. And also what their sense of purpose is in terms of serving society. What are those voices? Whose voice in the they're trying to sort of support and speak up for as well, which is really important. So I'm delighted to say that at the beginning of this show, we'll be speaking to Charlie Biss, an architect who set up an architect's firm, BB Partnership, in North London some 25 plus years ago. And Charlie will be talking about his journey over that period. And then we have also Simon Hawkins, who's setting up Size Tech Photographic Solutions in Kent and across London. And Simon will be telling us about how he's finding it and the challenges starting up a business, especially in this period of COVID. And then we'll have our regular features. So we've got Ollie Bramford in relation to digital marketing growth and strategies. He's got tips for you all. And we have our sponsor from Rich and Poor, Teresa Kennedy, who will be giving us some wise words of wisdom in terms of every business owner out there working hard in order to reflect and take on a moment of pause and serenity in their busy lives. So without further ado, we'll introduce Charlie.
So now we come to the part of the show where we talk to my first guest, Charlie. Charlie is a director of BB Partnership, an architects firm in North London. Hi, Charlie. How are you today?
Yeah, all good.
Excellent. And you've come today to talk about your role as a business owner and the steps you took in terms of starting that business. Can you just tell us a bit more about how you started BB Partnership?
Okay, so we qualified, and in fact my partner way back then, and we're talking 1974 now, we were sat next to each other at college.
Yeah.
Alphabetically, hence BB. And I'm still sat next to him for my, I think it must be pleasure, but we're still sat next to each other. And we qualified in 81, and we both worked in alternative practices until 91, where there was quite a big recession, and thought that the only real way forward was to start in the middle of the recession, which was when everything was slightly slower, and so we could get the head around the business side of things. And 30 odd years later, we're still at it. A lot of changes have happened over that period, but yeah, we've done it. And in December, I retire, so does my partner, Henry. And yeah, another chapter appears.
Wow. So when you made that decision to go into business, should I say, so having a profession is one thing, you know, becoming and qualifying as an architect, but to actually start and go into business and actually go into business with other people, that's a very big step. So how did you find that, and how did you know, how long would you say it took to actually sort of set up and really get running with fee-paying customers, clients?
Well, we started doing little jobs for parents and for friends, you know, little extensions here and there for a few quid, even while we were students. And then we continued that after we qualified. And so we knew how we worked together. We had a very basic sort of tax profile set up and very basic sort of modus operandi for our business. But we were doing reasonably okay at learning about being architects rather than running a business for the first 10 years of qualification, climbing up various professional ladders, and both of us became partners of the companies we worked with. And then I can distinctly remember it, actually. We had a terrible recession in 91 where people were just falling away, jobs were falling away, and we had a practice, there was about 40 of us, and it went down to about 10 quite quickly. And at one point, and the trouble is when you let people go, it's always the bottom up and all the directors and partners stay there. And I actually put my hand up and said, look, I can't bear this anymore. I will go, because we were obviously the overhead. And Henry and I just had the same experience, and we decided that actually we could set up on our own. And we had one job, which was a house in Notting Hill.
Yeah.
And we did that. And we had a little room in Shoreditch in Rivington Street. And we did the job and we paid. And so strangely, the only work that was left in the practice that we left was the work we were doing.
Okay.
And so we had to be rehired by them as consultants, if you like, just to finish off those jobs. So we had a little bit of cash flow,
yeah,
a little bit of overhead. We had wives who were working, and we struggled on. And then two went to three people, three went to four, and gradually the critical mass of the business got bigger. We then found new premises in Islington at the Angel. We bought an old pub, actually, and that became our home. And we were there for 25 years. And then we moved up to Holloway Road, and we have a much bigger practice there with new directors who've come in, and we'll get onto that. Because people, if you want them to remain loyal, they want a piece of the practice. As you get older, you want to have a legacy, and you want to have it sustainable. And so you hand it over as you get older, and they become much more embedded into the system, much more incentivized to work hard there and take it over, and it becomes theirs in the end. And that's pretty much going to happen in December this year, where we retire and they take over 100%. The same's going to happen. I think we're going to have to go back as consultants for a while just to manage the process. But, you know, maybe in a year's time, I'll have some good time off. And that's really the way we ran it. And strangely, getting the work wasn't ever the problem. Running the business was the big learning curve for us.
Yeah. You
know, having lawyers, having accountants, knowing what tax is, knowing what... Because when you work for another practice, that's all done for you, and you get in, you deal with the core business. And the learning curve there is being an architect. When you set up the business, the learning curve reverts into something slightly different, which is running a business and being in control of it. And I think the biggest thing is to keep it sustainable, look forward, look backwards, manage the moment, try to stay on top of everything.
So
and learning about employment law and VAT and you name it, we had to learn about it.
So, yeah, so as you know, when you made that leap from sort of professional to business person, and then you started to realise that you had to bring in this kind of external expertise to support you.
Sure.
How did you feel about this change of role? Because taking on those responsibilities can be seen as quite daunting, and then you see your overhead starting to increase and less time to actually do the fee paying work. So there's
I don't think you make a leap from one to the other. You make a leap with one to the other, because you have to continue to be an architect or a professional, and whether it's a medical or accounting or legal, it's only what your head is allowing you to think that brands your business. You know, it's about your own reputation, and so you have to really maintain your abilities to perform as an architect, and that's your core business. And you have to have good people around you. Now, my partner, Henry, who is much more organized than I am, and hell of a good at sorting out people, employment things, you know, talking to lawyers, talking to tax people, accountants, organizing where people sit, employment law and all that. And I'm probably better at getting out there and continuing the work. So the sum total is greater than the component parts in many respects, where two people can do the job of five, whereas one person can only do the job of one. And I think specifically to architecture, I don't think it's possible for one person to do everything anymore. There's just too complex as a business. So, you know, we had the two people running it and working first and foremost as great friends, great trust, just everything about our relationship was very strong, and we had this common goal which we were both passionate about. But he tended to go off towards the more administrative side. That's wrong, because he is always a bloody good architect, and I was partly involved in the administration, but the emphasis on, you know, the decision making process was with business was with him, and the decision making process with, if you like, direction was with me.
Yeah, so starting to...
It's the sum total is greater than the component parts.
Absolutely. So starting to sort of carve out those roles and responsibilities within the practice, yeah, to then start to grow.
Being pretty humble about the way you delegate decisions as well. You don't have to be... In fact, being a prima donna isn't very helpful, to be honest. It's it creates tensions which are unnecessary. Your best bet is to just... stay calm, stay relaxed, listen to what your business partner says to you, and perhaps, you know, swallow it a bit sometimes as well, you know, not you know, go other directions too.
And
it's a very interesting journey as a result of that.
So in terms of the vision for when you first joined heads with your business partner long term, What was the vision? What was keeping you both going and waking up at the
fear.
Morning?
Fear. Absolutely
fear
scared.
Fear of what?
Of not surviving. You know, we both had families. We both had mortgages. We both had homes. We had a business liabilities and responsibilities, and also an overriding passion to do what it was that we had trained and studied for. And, you know, frankly, we felt good at it. You know, we were two of us together. We didn't have the when we set up in 91, there was an awful lot of people who were burdened by the difficulties that the recession had thrust on them. We had none of that. We were starting completely fresh. We didn't have debt. We didn't have, we didn't have anything. We just said, right, we're open for business tomorrow morning. Let's do it. And in we went. We had this one job, which was excellent, and we did that, although even that was put on hold for 6 months. So we had to scratch around and find it. But, you know, the last people that got paid were us, and we didn't mind that. You know, we just kind of got on with it. And to be honest, while business is slow, you can do a lot of learning about how the business is going to run. You have a sort of slower introduction to the various requirements, and as business picks up and your experience of how to run the business is more refined, you then end up being able to handle a speeding of an economy.
So
then what happened? My goodness. Yeah.
So can you see a lot of similarities now in terms of where we are in the economic environment we're in? We've had quite a slow period.
Yes. It's today is an interesting one, because I think that work practices are changing too. And we historically enjoyed people being in the office and talking and buzzing around each other. And this working from home thing it might be okay, but it's difficult for us, because we, you know, if you have an idea, you want to bounce it off someone, you want to talk to someone. Sometimes, you know, you have a building you're working on and you work as a team, and that's difficult if you're not in the same room and interacting. Yet technically it's possible, whether emotionally it's possible, I've no idea. We're all learning on that. personally, it's brought my retirement forward about 6 months, and it's been a dress rehearsal for that, you know, staying at home. And I've quite enjoyed it, to be honest, but I have worked extremely hard during it, and I've really very much enjoyed cutting the bit that I don't like, which is the travelling in and out of London, out of my life, and waking up, sleeping properly, eating properly, because I'm at home being told to come and have lunch and things, and doing stuff which is around the house has been a terrific learning thing for me. But then I'm on my way out, if you know what I mean. I don't know how I would feel if I was one of the younger directors in our company who had just taken it all on, and then suddenly everything's changed. I think that might be a bit more scary.
So you're absolutely right there. And I just wanted to focus in terms of, finding your customers. Now that is a big challenge for any business. It's fine to have a target market to approach, but to find someone who wants to pay you, I think, is one of the biggest challenges all businesses face. You have to be ahead of the competition. You have to show something cut above the rest. So what would you say for your particular business BB partnership and your sense of brand and what you deliver to fee paying customers? What was it that you're offering as your type of
USP? Have to reverse back into being professional. You know, we've identified there are two sides to this. One is running the business, but the other is not forgetting that you have a core passion and a core belief, which is creating quality buildings and perhaps listening to what clients have to say, and perhaps not imposing your style on them, but listening, giving them what they want back. Mm-hmm. And to a large extent, we have found, or historically, talking back over 40 years, I don't think getting the work has ever been a problem, actually. It really hasn't. It kind of snowballs on you, and if you have one or two people who talk well of you, and if you never try not to let people down, and you don't screw up, you know, and all of those things, and you provide the building or the service that they asked for you, they will come back. And we have found that, or I personally have found that, clients do remain loyal, and they spread the word. And I've never really had any trouble getting work. Doing the work has been difficult, because you have to force it, and then you have to pay people.
So that's what I was going into as the next step. So sort of one success becomes another challenge in a way, because
doing
the work.
That's where you have partners who are good at that side of the work, you know, making sure that fee appointment letters are properly sorted out, making sure that bills are sent out at the right time, making sure that the job is resourced, and making sure, you know, and that's where I think one person would struggle, because especially with architecture, you're in an essentially a giving subject. You ask me, and I you ask me to do your house for you, and I say, well, why don't you do that? And that's the exciting bit. And then, oh my God, how am I going to pay for it, sort of thing. So, the amount of times that, for example, I've been asked to do the best I can and get the best planning permission possible. And then the client turns around, you get the planning permission, then he turns around and says, yeah, but I can't afford to build it. And it's like, yeah, but the brief has changed. So what you have to do is manage the business side of it in parallel with the rather more elegant side of it, which is charming clients, seducing them, making them feel wanted, making them feel listened to, and indulging them in their dreams. And if, as we have done a lot of private houses over our years, sometimes that's why people work and make a lot of money, because and they take their money home and they spend it on themselves and their family. So it's quite easy to justify that. Commercially speaking, it's different, you know, because 1 square foot equals equals a bit more money, you know. Then so that's quite easy to quantify. It's a sort of simple thing. But houses, you're dealing with the dreams, you know. That's an interesting one.
Yeah. So how did you
don't lose the reason why you're doing it. by all means, run it efficiently and make sure you're paid properly. But you know, you've still got to do a good job.
So that risk that you mentioned in relation to, say, planning permission or business opportunity, should we say, how did you have to put in processes that mitigated that risk so that you could qualify, you know, making sure you weren't wasting that time and energy on a situation that wouldn't convert?
It's a subject that even after nearly 40 years, we sort of, not clash on, but we debate, because I am firmly of the opinion that to get a bit, you have to give a bit. And if you said to me, or somebody said to me, come and help me look at my house, I would physically have to go to that house and I would physically have to listen to what they wanted and then physically interpret that into whatever. And I personally don't see how you can charge for that. Others do, and they do charge for it. But part of my approach is to give that, mm-hmm. even if it involves a bit of a drive or a morning's work, or I have to give something up to do it. I see that as an essential part of my generosity, if you like. And then if that turns into a job, excuse me, that then is part of the fact finding that you have, the research you have to do to turn that job into something that's exciting and simple. We always used to have a job number in the office that was called XXX, which was basically where I dumped all my speculative work.
Very good.
And I used to fight like hell with everybody because I wanted to keep that, because that was my area of that was my accordion. That's where I was squeezing in and out. Whereas others preferred to, you know, you go and see someone, you charge them for an hour's work, and then you come back and it came to nothing. But I don't believe in that personally.
Well, thank you so much, Charlie, for giving us such insight in the first half of this show into what it was like setting up BB Partnerships, an architect firm in North London, and your journey as a business owner from start to now transitioning into retirement. And we'll hear more about that latter journey, hopefully in next show. If you want to find out anything more about BB Partnership, I'm sure you can find more details on the internet. Okay, so moving on to the next chapter.
Great. Now it's one of my favourite parts of the show, where we tap in and Twitter woo to Ollie. Hi, Ollie. How are you doing?
Really good. Thanks, Sophie. Yeah, good to be on the show.
Cool. How's France at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely lovely. Thank you.
Yeah. So you're going to give us your show tip on business growth strategies. And I'd like to listen to what you got to share with us today, Ollie.
Great. Yeah, so my tip today is to prioritize your bottlenecks. So just imagine your marketing and sales as a funnel, from loads of people who are somewhat aware of your brand, to maybe less people who visited your website, even less people who you'd consider leads, and even less people who've actually bought from you. And this tip is simply about focusing your limited marketing resources on the parts of that funnel where people get stuck, and unblocking those bottlenecks. So a good question that I often ask is what change, what marketing activity could double your overall sales revenue? What part of that funnel could you tweak that allows people to flow through it? That's my tip of the day.
Ollie, that is fantastic. And it really does help us focus on where in our advertising, our marketing, and maybe we're not opening that gate. What can we do? What behavior? So really appreciate that. Thanks, Ollie. See you at the next show.
Cheers.
Bye.
Rich and Poor provides universal inclusive beauty products that solve your skin problems with just one use, and proudly sponsors the new Owl Hour business show, hosted by Sophie Newbold on Phoenix FM.
And now we've reached the time for our next guest, startup technology company, Size Tech Photographic Studios, And we have Simon here in the studio, Simon Hawkins. You're going to tell us a bit more about your business, and I'll be asking some questions.
So Simon, who are you selling your technology to at the moment and services?
It's not actually right now as we speak. It's COVID's happened just as I was about to sign some equipment, some premises and things like that. So we pulled out, and I think, to be honest, the best is I was sceptical about the decision at the time. Yeah. I wanted to go ahead with it, but I had some advice and it was kind of a bit risky. But now I've come out the other side. We've come out the other side now. Restaurants, pubs, i.e. all that is open now.
Yeah.
We have got some really good deals on premises on the table.
Okay, well done.
I'm seeing some on Tuesday.
Yeah.
To target a particular person, I think, is a bit, you know, a bit, not. I wouldn't say discrimination. I'd more say trying to target the rich.
Right.
And I'm more about the individual than the money. You know, I'm more about helping somebody else understand what they're buying.
Or someone that's less fortunate. And
yeah, exactly. Or someone that's less fortunate, like single parents. They really want to see their son succeed in their GCSEs or their A-levels, and they want to get the best equipment. Well, then Size Tech Photo Studios is your best way.
Or the daughters around.
So, Simon, that to me sounds like a fantastic... That sounds more vocational than business. However, are you focusing on business to business, selling to schools, selling to government, selling to individuals?
Exactly. It's not more of anything in particular. It's a bit of everything. Yeah, you know, whoever wants, we're going to have the website built up, which is under construction as we speak.
Yeah.
It's going to be a wide range. It'll be government, businesses, schools, individuals, or anyone that wants a product. I feel, you know, that our generation, this generation that we're in, that we're finding ourselves in now, are more technology and peer pressured into, or should I say, the parents are more peer pressured into the fact of, you've got to have an iPhone of this quality or that quality, or you'll get a kick in or whatever. That was when I was at school.
Yeah.
Or your child gets left behind because technology, because they can't afford it.
Yeah.
So Simon, introduce, who's the chap who's chatting now? Who's there with you?
Nathan Lee. He's the other. He's one of my best mates.
My job is to look where he can expand, and the finances as well. So
brilliant.
I look on the websites and all that, see what I can find, then I chat to him. I mention all my ideas as well and what other companies we're going to as well.
Brilliant.
At some point, I'm thinking, like, we could sell our phone cases as well. But my idea as well is speak to a big, big brand, Nutella.
Yes.
And if we promote their product and we sell their product, we can advertise their product, but we can also have an exchange, so an advertiser or something like that.
That sounds like big business thinking to me, and
expand.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And so you've got to a stage where you've been very proactive in getting support, haven't you, as a business, Simon? Like you,
I'm fortunate in terms of I have a lot of people with bit like-minded business ideas around me, so I think I'm a little bit more fortunate than some people would in my position at the moment.
Plus, I'm going to start my own business at some point, but my business is not going to start for a few years to come.
Okay.
My business is going to be big.
Yeah.
A nightclub and a pub. So that's not a
taking
out.
There's always need for a nightclub and a pub. So
I'm playing a long game. It'll work out.
Excellent. So talking about Size Tech Photo Studios then, and actually, you know, I'm really interested in the ambition of the young, you know, because, you know, we need to support people wanting to move into different, you know, a different level, if you like, of risk, of investment, of, you know, because when you start your journey, how have you found it in terms of putting that foot forward to set up that business is one thing, but now to make it a success, what do you think?
I'm learning every single day. I'm finding out things every single day that I didn't know the day before. You know, actually signing everything to do with the setup and whatever else, I find it scary because it's all right getting everything online, but once all the documents are signed and sent off, there, you know, once that signature's on there, there's no going back. So yeah, I'm excited.
Okay, that's interesting. You're saying no going back. You have taken that action, and I'm fully supportive of your startup, Simon. And you know, but at the end of the day, you know, there are things that can go wrong, but you seem to be quite wise in the sense of you are seeking help. You speak to people. You know, some people don't get help, and that's when they're suddenly vulnerable.
Yeah, the vulnerability of people is exactly what you just said. It's where they don't know people, or they are scared about asking for help because people might think they're stupid or silly, or you know, or even simpler, even wider than that, they don't know who to go to. Their parents can't afford the internet or whatever. So I mean, it's not just about not being able to seek help. It's obviously how do they seek that help? Where do they go to seek that help? And who do they talk to get the right help in the end anyway? Yeah. Not a lot of people know that.
That's really interesting. So in terms of, you know, where you want to go, and, you know, you've put in you've sought a lot of support in your very, very early days. When do you see yourself starting to trade now?
Well, at the moment, it's only an estimation because we haven't got a fixed date at the moment, but we are looking in the next 3 to 6 months. But that's purely because we want to find, it's not because we don't want to trade or we can't. It's more to the fact that we want to find the right spot to trade. Because I think now is the key, it's the key time now to start getting businesses with funding, with COVID, people losing money, and they want to have a name to the paper more than what's coming in every month. They just want that name to the paper every single month. And we're finding that the more we wait and the more we negotiate, the more we get it cheaper. We are looking at a office on Tuesday, as I've previously mentioned. We're looking at actually about 6 in the heart of London on Tuesday, all around from Victoria to Chelsea to all that area. And you know, it's a good journey to go on because we will in the end, once one bit sorted, it's one step at a time. My favourite line is slowly, slowly catchy monkey.
Okay. Catchy monkey in a good way, hopefully.
Exactly.
So in terms of, you know, you said that the youth, if you like, and now sort of, I think older people are getting much more tech savvy because of what's happening in COVID. You know, everyone's on the different conference channels and everything.
Of course they are. You know, family with like even people that are like foreign guys, like in this country that are from Africa or wherever, they're talking to family back home on Zoom and WhatsApp and whatever else.
Absolutely. And yeah, and digital inclusion is very important, isn't it? So people who normally can't even get out of their house might be even now using a bit more technology to speak to loved ones.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think the digital innovation, as I call it, will be, in the next 5 years, will be huge.
Yeah, I mean, it already is, but in terms of huge to people who wouldn't normally even have ever had it in their lives at all. So in terms of growing online, are you using online to grow your business? Is that a big part of your strategy?
Yes, it is. We are looking, I think it was like I spoke to a company called Yell last week, just gone, and I have agreed a website deal where the hosting, the everything you need for that is under construction now. So I've done all that. They're doing all that, putting all that content together. And we are also liaising with some property agents at the moment. The idea behind that is Riverside Flats, 1 to 2 bedroom, purely for that reason, is for press shots. I think press shots are your key. Updated every about every 2 to 4 months, have something new.
New on your website?
Yeah, something new out there. Digital marketing website, whatever you have.
Right, okay.
Ideally your website, because that's probably going to be, if you don't have social media, then your website's the next best thing. So I think, you know, it will be on social media and on our digital channels, and it will be on the website. And I advise anybody about every 2 to 4 months to get something new done, because there's nothing worse than people to see something that's 35 years old and you've only just started.
Very good, Simon. I really like that. I might ask you back to be a regular tipster on what to do for your websites. That's really good.
Ideas as well.
Yeah?
Yeah, we're thinking of like getting a warehouse. So we have like lawyers coming in, and we're going to have like a shopping Rochester as well. So we can promote that in Rochester High Street, and it'll bring other things as well. We're also thinking of working with Amazon as well.
Okay.
Try and work with them. So that's another platform we can do as well.
That's brilliant. And that you know, to run a business isn't about setting it up and running on a platform, is it? It's setting it up and going, I think, for growth. You know, that's
definitely business. You know, if you're going on an even keel, you know, any business that is going now or has been going for X amount of, 15 years, you're looking at 3-year process of, first year, you're making a loss. Second year, you know, you're a little bit better than the first year. And the third year is when you start seeing, you know, that vision going upwards. You know, in the first 2 years, then, yeah, I think that's crucial for people, because that's when they're going to look at things and think, no, it's ain't worth it.
But you need to know, surely, what levels of loss you can manage
thousands of pounds of loss when you're paying that to get the product in. You know, it's, again, you know, I say that the first 2 years are crucial, but again, like you say, you got to do, it's a bit of mathematics work. You know, if you're paying 10,000 out, but you're losing 25, then you've got to ask yourself a question, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Simon, we are out of time, and I'm so sorry, because I really want to hear more of you, but I am pleased because you're going to come back on next week's show, aren't you?
I am indeed.
And we're going to just look a bit more at you as a person, as in what is driving Simon to do this. And I think you touched upon the fact that you're not, you know, the job thing quite hasn't worked out for you, and you're definitely not alone there. And you know, and to take that kind of positive, turning a negative into a positive, could be hugely inspirational for a lot of people, and especially a lot of young people and even older people. You know, a lot of redundancies at the moment, things like that. So thanks a lot for sharing, and really nice. And Nathan, lovely to meet you too.
Yep. And keep them driving. I don't let them give up. I keep them going. I keep them going. Give up.
You've got to keep on going. Never give up. That's awesome. And
I need to see the success.
Absolutely. Keep going. Keep strong. And stay courageous and brave. Absolutely. And get help. That's key. So we'll see you next week. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, guys.
All right.
And now we get to the part of the show where we turn to our sponsor, Teresa from Rich and Poor. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you, Sophie?
Yeah, I'm good. How's the business?
It's exciting and worrying and adventurous. quite an amalgamation of things, which I think comes with the territory.
Absolutely. And how long have you been with the startup, your Rich and Poor?
Roughly 3 to 6 months. I say 3 to 6 months because there's self-taught lessons within that. So, it's since the beginning of this year.
Brilliant. Well, you know, we're 100% behind you with it, Teresa. And obviously I'm delighted for you to be volunteering to help me with this feature. That so these are sort of meditation readings that I have found particularly helpful in terms of driving positivity into my day. So Teresa, you've got the meditation, the promise, the wisdom for today. Are you happy to read to the listeners, our listeners?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So we're accustomed to thinking that there are two sides to a subject, either right or wrong, Democrat or Republican, and walk, don't walk. I think we see these in everyday life, and this binary mode of thinking may lead us to disregard many possible solutions to our problems, and that's what makes ball games. We say as though life were a competitive game. So where relationships are an area where many of us fail to recognise that a question can have many right answers, we find ourselves locked into behaviour patterns that guarantee we will be unhappy. So we may set ourselves up as victims. Everything happens to me, or as bullies. They all obey me, but no one likes me. If we look at our own part, we often see that if we had behaved differently in a situation, the outcome might have been different. And we often act as though we were programmed in a simple binary mode, yet we have the power to choose a new mode at any moment. I absolutely love that. I think that's fantastic and so relevant.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Teresa. That was awesome. So that was Teresa Kennedy from our sponsor, Rich and Poor. And we'll be talking to Teresa again in our next show. Well, that now brings us to the end of the show. I really hope you all got a lot of insights and some, you know, tips, wisdom, understanding what people are going through, how hard people have to work. It's, you know, no one is in this alone. And, you know, the purpose of this show is to hear from business owners at different parts of their journeys so that we can learn off each other. You know, a business journey isn't meant to be alone. It's about being engaged and being part of a community and supporting each other. So I really hope you got what you needed out the show, and that you will hopefully tune in to our next Owl Hour podcast. I'm Sophie Newbold, and it's been a delight to be on the show with you today. And, you know, just keep tuned in. I'll keep posting my blogs, and it'll be great to, to make this work. Okay. Good luck.
Rich and Poor provides universal inclusive beauty products that solve your skin problems with just one use, and proudly sponsors the new Owl Hour business show, hosted by Sophie Newbold on Phoenix FM.